I'm Ed Keenan, filling in here and glad to be with you. You know, and I'm hoping the long weekend will be festive, but what we want to talk about right now is the opposite of festive. It's shocking, saddening, horrifying, disturbing, whatever words you want to use. But it's you know, the University of Waterloo stabbings that happened the other day. I'm reading from a Global News report that says police in Waterloo are investigating what led to a stabbing at the city's main university that sent three people to hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. The incident at the University of Waterloo has shaken the school community and left many seeking answers. Police say that a 24-year-old international student was taken into custody in what investigators are describing as a hate-motivated crime. He walked in with knives to a classroom that was teaching a class on gender identity, asked the professor to confirm that that was what the class was teaching before launching the attack. As I say, police say this is a hate-motivated attack. Joining us to discuss it is Dr. Barbara Perry, criminologist and director of Ontario Tech University's Center on Hate, Bias, and Extremism. Dr. Perry, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Ed.
Police say that this is a hate-motivated crime. What do we know, if anything, about the motivations that may have led to this?
Well, we don't have very much information so far, aside from the fact that it is very likely it was motivated by gender animosity, misogyny, and I think also transphobia, that is resistance to this notion of, non-binary gender identity and gender expression, given the questions that that the youth asked, or the perpetrator asked, and the content of the course.
Yeah, I guess we're dealing with a 24-year-old student or recent graduate who is the suspect who's been taken into custody. I guess from the police, that's what we suspect motivated the attack, because they say it seems to be hate motivated, and the information we have is about the questions that he was asking before he began his attack. People in Toronto who remember the Yonge Street van attack will remember the man convicted of that, the man who committed that crime, was motivated by this sort of misogynist incel ideology. We've seen mass shootings and attacks in the United States driven by misogyny. Is waves of attack on sort of like gender identity related things something that we're seeing arise in at all?
Oh, absolutely. And I think we've seen it, in discursive forms, but also obviously in physical form as well. And it's sort of a reaction to a perceived, loss of privilege and loss of, I think, reliance on what they understand as the normativity of a gender binary. So you've mentioned some examples there. And I think that if we look at the different kinds of attacks that we're seeing in the U.S., that is legislative attacks on the trans community in particular, it's all part of that continuum where we're seeing, the vilification, really, of those who don't correspond to that gender binary in terms of restrictions on their capacity to seek, health care and, the kind of health care that they need as especially trans individuals who are transitioning. So I think that, those kinds of attacks, the kinds of narratives that we've seen, even in the Canadian context, looking at some of the school board trustee controversies that we've had over the last year or so, where we've had people running on explicitly transphobic platforms trying to, create fear, instill fear of grooming in the schools, Drake story time and all of that. Gender neutral washrooms being seen as part of a broader agenda.
Yeah, I mean, I think like when you look at the drag story time stuff and the discussions are like discussions may be elevating what's taking place, but the political rhetoric around trans identities and especially what's taught in schools or not and whatnot, there's a real turn among American Republicans and sort of right-wing currents to sort of portraying this as somehow preying on children, sometimes being a predatory, way of thinking about the world, this groomer. And it seems to me inherently dangerous to try and talk about things that way. And as you say, like, there are lots of legislative manifestations of that that you know, make it even more of a lightning rod. But is it something that, as a result of that, we're seeing more like people being like extremist or being sort of radicalized by that to strike out in acts of violence like this?
Oh, absolutely, because that is an enabling kind of narrative, right? It creates an environment that normalizes hostility and, of course, fear of these communities that have been identified as threats. So there's no question at all that there's a direct relationship between that kind of political posturing and then subsequent acts of violence. I mean, we've seen it in other contexts. If you remember, shortly after Donald Trump was elected in the U.S. and, that ban on entry from Muslim-majority countries, it was that very same weekend that we saw the murders of six Muslim men in Quebec City by, Islamophobic perpetrators. So those links are very clear, I think, in terms of the dangers of that kind of essentially hate speech, dangerous speech.
Yeah, and I do also remember in the United States the sort of Pizzagate, where this radical and completely untrue conspiracy theory about a pedophile ring operated by Democratic politicians out of the basement of a pizza place in Northwest Washington, D.C., a lovely pizza place. I've been there. But cause somebody with a gun to show up and demand to inspect the basement himself. They don't even have a basement. But again, like, when you normalize, if people become convinced by this rhetoric of that this is dangerous to children, that this is preying on children, that somehow we're not talking about somebody's own gender identity, we're talking about a movement that preys on people, then to a certain mindset, this kind of violent response seems almost reasonable. And it seems like we need to take steps back from that, right?
Well, we absolutely need to walk it back. And I think that this happened on a university campus in that context. You know, the intent was to silence those conversations. The intent was to send a message that, there's no space for that kind of discussion at the university. I think this highlights the fact that for the need for that ongoing conversation, and that we do need to have much more honest and open discussions about, respect for, those who are not on the gender binary. And that's something that, it harks back to 20 years ago, the conversations we had around sexuality and homosexuality. And so this is sort of the next frontier, if you will, of that conversation. So, what did we learn from that? We learned from, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, those same kinds of patterns of homophobia, that, you don't let that close off conversation. You don't let that silence communities. You use it to motivate and mobilize communities to defend themselves and to normalize themselves, not the hate.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Dr. Barbara Perry is a criminologist and director of Ontario Tech University's Center on Hate, Bias, and Extremism. Thanks for coming on and discussing this with me today.
Thanks for having me, Ed.
It is a difficult, a disturbing topic for a lot of people, especially when it results in this kind of, loss of life or threat to life. But as Dr. Perry says, I think that means, we have to keep having these conversations. I took a gender studies class in university, more than a couple decades ago. And it made me think and led to a lot of good conversations. And I think, I hope that's what it should lead to. Certainly nothing like this. This is very dangerous.